Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to another podcast.
This meeting is being recorded.
Hashtag My Investing Story. Hi, my name is Ann McNeil, and I am the Master Wealth Builder, helping you to build a wealthier business and life. And I'm excited to be hosting another podcast tonight with Ione McNeil and our special guest here on My Investing Story. Tonight is a regular. And we want to pay her some real, real special respect, and we want to give her lots of love. We are all actually volunteers with this phenomenal organization called Better Investing. And Better Investing is a 501c3 educational organization of volunteers helping us to learn how to become better investors. And tonight, as we pick up this conversation with one of our regular guests and volunteers, is none other than Ms. Ann Newman. And Ann grew up in a middle-class family, and actually we were talking before the show started, talking about this show and the fact that everybody has an investing story. She goes on to say that her dad was an officer in the Air Force, and her mom was in that awesome position where she never worked. So with that, I have Ann come on and share her story, and Ione is going to also come on and interview her. Good evening, Ione and Ann. How are you both this evening?
Good evening. I'm doing well. And yourself?
Awesome, awesome. I'm excited to have Ann on. She's always here supporting this show and supporting every single person we've ever had on the show, making her comments, asking her questions. And tonight, we have the privilege of interviewing her. She talked about remembering her dad and some wonderful activities he was doing in terms of stop notes and things like that. So we'll get into that, Ione, as you interview her. And I'm excited to hear her story tonight.
Oh, Anne, let's take you back actually to when you first heard about Better Investing. Do you remember how you first came across NAIC, or at the time, NAIC?
I sure do. I had just taken a break from my regular teaching job, and I was talking to a friend here in Columbus, Georgia, who we first met in the Panama Canal Zone. I'm not talking about Panama City Beach. And they were friends down there. And she casually mentioned something about an investment club. I had never heard of an investment club, but I immediately perked up. I knew that was something I was interested in, and I told her that, and she said, well, we have 20 people, and we're on a waiting list, and so, you know, we'll let you know if anything opens up. And luckily, it wasn't too long after that that the next person on the list declined, and they came to me. So that was 2001. I think I was 52 years old at the time.
I'm so glad you shared your age, because I was going to ask you that. I think it's so important to hear where people and when people first came across BI. Because most often it's not always young. So at that time, you said you were taking a sabbatical from teaching, correct?
Yeah, my mother-in-law had a bad accident. We had moved her to Columbus, and it was just, God was telling me to take a break. I was getting kind of burnt out at the time.
So even at age 52, I mean, had you started already thinking about retirement? What was your perspective of, I don't want to call it the afterlife, but your after working life? You know,
I'm not ready to go yet.
Yes, but your after working life, because I think a lot of people, when they're working, depending on the organization they work for or the corporation they work for, they're usually just in the mindset with the blinders of on, I just got to do my 30 years. After I do my 30 years, then I can retire and I'll have this money and I'll be able to just kind of live the life that I want. At 42, when you first heard about BI, had you started thinking about retiring? I'm sorry, 52.
I really hadn't. My husband was back and forth between an officer and enlisted. So he wasn't an officer the whole time. And I wasn't really thinking that far ahead. I knew, in fact, if you don't mind if I jump back to college days, when I was in college, I just didn't even really think about what career I wanted because I just figured, like my mom and my sister, I'd meet somebody and I wouldn't have to worry about it. But that didn't happen. And I remember going to job interviews at Emory, and I had no clue what I was doing. I would ask them questions about their company, you know, as if I was interviewing them. You know, it was sad, really. So I got what a lot of us did at that time frame in the 60s and got a teaching degree. And I majored in Spanish, of all things, and so my teaching degree was in Spanish. And then when I went to work, though, my first job opportunity, since I was from the Orlando area, was Walt Disney World opened up in October 71. And I think I've always been sprinkled with pixie dust and Mickey Mouse and everything. So going to work for Mickey was, you know, like a dream come true. I was in ticket sales, which was fine. And actually there I met my husband. So after we dated for a couple years, he got engaged. He said, oh, by the way, I've always wanted to join the Army. So then it was time to maybe start thinking about using a teaching degree. And I took a sabbatical, you know, at that time after a while just to kind of get my head together again. And then in 2001, my daughter would start, you know, was going to get married, and we had a wedding to pay for. We wanted to take a trip to Alaska, so I had to go back to work. And I didn't really put a time limit on how far, much longer I would teach. When I got to 61 and was teaching a whole lot of younger kids, they wore me out. But then I was teaching English as a second language, and K through 12. So I taught 21 years, but I never really had retirement in mind, although I knew that a woman needs to be able to have something to fall back on in case. You know, don't depend completely.
And is that something that you learned from your mom? Because your mom was a stay-at-home mother, and so you learned the one side of aspiring to marry for security. But did your mom also teach some other things?
There wasn't anything she taught. It was just, I guess, observing. But if I can go back to Daddy, watching him sit at his desk, and he had this, I don't remember what you call it, but it was some kind of financial forms that had all kinds of little lines and boxes, and he would put the name of the stock and the dividends and, how much, you know, and just all that, and he kept track of it all by hand. And I would kind of watch him do that, and so I knew that was important to him. And I knew that's what put me through college.
Because right, you're because of your dad investing, he was able to pay for you to go to Emory, correct?
Right.
And it's interesting that you're talking about being exposed to it because you watched him do that. But was there? Do you ever remember a time where he talked to you about what he was doing?
I might ask him a simple question or two, but really, it was just observing.
Okay.
And my mom kind of knew enough somewhere along the line. I don't really know how she learned, but that she could kind of follow up with it after he died in 79. But that was always kind of what took care of them besides whatever retirement he got. I think more so than the retirement.
Right, right. And so even when you graduated university and started working at Walt Disney and started dating your husband, when did investing kind of come back up? Was it something that your husband even brought up while you all were married?
Daddy had given me some stock when I got married, when I guess when I turned 21 or 23 or something. And he knew I didn't know how to manage it. So we went with Barnett Bank at the time because I think that's who he was kind of dealing with. And the one big memory I have is that one of those stocks that Barnett picked is Xerox. And Xerox tanked. And I thought, okay, don't completely trust the financial institution to run your money. And later I learned the rule of five. Out of every five stocks that you buy, one might tank. One might do exceptionally well beyond your expectations, you know, what they would call in BI a three-banger or a five-banger or a ten-banger, and then the rest will do about what you projected with your studies. So, I knew that I needed to learn some on my own.
Wow, that's a phenomenal story. And it is so true how the principles of BI kind of keep coming to the surface the longer you've been invested, the investing regularly, the don't put all of your eggs in one basket, the rule of five. You know, you have to give it time to actually watch the rule of five work, you know, because when we start off, we hope all of them are winners. But, you know, just the law of averages, all of them are not. And so what I found is staying close to BI helps you to understand and learn the principles and then teaches you how to take action on, in a sense, the losers in your portfolio. So
it's too late.
Exactly. So as we move back to when you got the call to join the investment club, you know, what were you thinking? What were you anticipating? And what was that first experience like?
I was excited. And then we were a better investing club. I mean, that was in our bylaws. We have to be. And Julie Werner kind of had our club under her wing. So several of us that were more on the new side would travel to Warner Robins about 90 minutes away and take her class. And she said, you need to take my class three times before you truly understand. Now, this is pencil and paper days, folks, and colored pencils and rulers. So that was the learning process.
Real time being invested. And what was Julie teaching? Was she teaching a beginner investor class or a stock selection class? Or
no, she was teaching how to do the FSG and make your judgments and see the lines and all that kind of stuff.
And what kept you – now, one question is, what kept you a member of Better Investing for this long?
I never thought about leaving. I went to my first convention in 2005 in Atlanta, partly because it was close and convenient, but it was a CompuFest. And back then, CompuFest and BI were pretty much, you know, joined at the hip. And I don't know if it's the teacher in me or what, but I am a sponge for learning. I love to go to these conferences. It doesn't bother me to go from class to class to class all day long. I'm just a sponge. And I need to put a word out about Gretchen Hurst. She was the very first person I met at a concert. And I was new. I didn't know who she was. She didn't know who I was. I said, I don't know where to begin. I don't know how to choose classes. And she took her time and sat with me and helped me choose classes for that first convention. And then later on, she did some arm twisting and got me a whole lot more involved. But I miss it.
Wow. Yes. And Gretchen is a legend in the better investing community, and really embodies the spirit of the better investing volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the commitment of the members and the volunteers is really what makes our community unique. It's also what makes it very welcoming, because there are so many people willing to invest the time to help new people adjust and learn.
They care.
Simply put.
Yeah, they care.
Yeah. So talk to us about how you helped to form the Georgia chapter and the work that the Georgia chapter is now doing in Georgia, throughout Georgia.
That was the arm twisting involved. I was asked to be on the committee. I retired from teaching in 2011. T1, I was getting tired. I had a lot of young students that wore me out. And financially, you know, it was going to be okay. So I retired, and funny thing, one of the decisions was I went to bank in, I think, St. Louis, and they announced the next one was going to be during the school month. And I said to myself, I need to retire so I can go. I mean, seriously. So that was one of my excuses to retire. Was I had to keep going to the convention. I've been to 13. I'm anxious to get back. So I was on the people in Atlanta, there was an Atlanta chapter for a while. They would reach out and say, you know, would you like us to come visit? Well, we were a club of 20 or 15 or something. I don't remember how many at the time. And I felt guilty with somebody coming that far to talk to us. And besides, that was the Atlanta chapter. And so a friend of mine, I kept saying, why isn't there a Georgia chapter? And we kept fussing. And Larry Reno asked me to be on the committee to help, because by then the Atlanta chapter had folded. I don't know the politics of what happened, but it folded. So he asked me to be on the committee. And I said yes. And a lady volunteered to be the president, but she never answered any phone calls or emails. And Gretchen and Larry and some others were starting to get rather upset. So they contacted me, and between Julie and Larry twisting my arm, I became the first president. And I said, I don't even know what a director is or a volunteer is. And they said, don't worry, we've got your back. So for 3 years, we got started. Gretchen called me one time, and I thought, oh, my gosh, what did I do wrong? Scared to death. And she said, I want to know what the Georgia chapter is doing so well. But y'all are your numbers are growing. I said, they are. I don't know.
So let's talk a little bit about the programs that the Georgia chapter puts on and the purpose of the chapter, because we haven't really, especially on My Investing Story, really talked about the service that the whatever chapter. I'm a member and a director of the South Florida chapter, but I mean the chapters really provide that local touch, that local help and support. And we do a lot of things. And so I just want to give you a chance to kind of talk about, especially with you being a past president of the Georgia chapter, to just talk about really the mission of the chapter and what are some of the things that events that you that the chapter would put on and is still putting on that really helps to support better investing members and better investing investment clubs.
For a while, and I forget how many years ago, around 2010 or maybe later, we got together. Well, no, it was 2012 when we formed. Maybe 2015. We got together with several other chapters, Alabama, Tennessee, maybe South Carolina, and we put together the Southeastern series of webinars. And we would present usually two or maybe three presentations with different volunteers, you know, taking a part in it. Those did real well. But it was, you know, you get to the point where it's always the same volunteers. And, you know, people kind of get worn out. And of course, people like Howard has gone on to be a district or bigger, you know, director and stuff. So, that you know, you can only put somebody so far on what they can do. So we did those for several years, and they did very well. I think after that is when, I think about 4 years ago, Georgia started putting on an investment fair. And they might have done that in the Atlanta chapter before, but that, again, that was before my time. And that went really well. Now, last year, because of COVID, it was a virtual fair. But it was still successful, and maybe in some ways more so, because more people could attend virtually. And it was spread out over several days instead of all, you know, one day, basically. So we would have national speakers come in. Ron Bruin, Avi one year, I think, Pat Robinson, you know, all kinds of really great people. Ken Kavula. And those did really well. And we would try to run the gamut of classes for beginners, intermediates, and the experienced investors. So we've had good success from that.
Talk to us a little bit about what a club visit is.
And that was what I was hesitant about at the very beginning when it was the Atlanta chapter. And then I was the one calling up clubs and saying, can I come there?
Exactly.
We would do, if they would let us come, and sometimes they say, we don't need you. And again, I think part of that is just them not understanding, you know, how we can do something. Sometimes we just want to see how they operate and get good ideas to share. And they don't understand that that can also be a positive. But we might do a portfolio review if they share their portfolio with us ahead of time. We might do an FSG class or, you know, really whatever they feel like they could benefit from and they ask for, we can prepare and give. And I would usually, at that time, have Middle Georgia. And so I would go toward Warner Robins or Macon or areas like that. And I think I even went down south toward the Florida line to Bainbridge or Thomaston or something.
Yeah, I found, you know, a lot of, and rightfully so, investment clubs are private, and that's why BI is now making sure that each chapter, each Better Investing chapter that you find on our website, betterinvesting.org, has a model club, because a model club allows anyone in the whole world, anybody that's a member of the general public, to come in and visit. Model clubs are better investing clubs sponsored by that chapter that holds open meetings. At its very core, investment clubs are a partnership among people that decide to pool their resources, money together, whatever amount they choose, however regularly they choose to pool it, for the sole purpose of investing in something. Better investing investment clubs generally are a group of people investing in all things the stock market. We don't do real estate. We don't do any of the other, I would say, more riskier investments, commodities, exchange, those types of things. It's just purely stocks, sometimes mutual funds, sometimes index funds, sometimes ETFs, but mainly stocks because that goes along with what we teach at Better Investing. But, you know, for anybody, I mean, I think that it's such a beautiful opportunity for people that are interested in investing, interested in either joining an investment club, wanting to start an investment club, or simply trying to find out what an investment club is. And recently, I think because of COVID and us being digital, virtual, I should say, this is my first time having visited this many investment clubs.
Georgia has two. We have one in Atlanta and we have one in Central Georgia.
Right. I mean, Georgia is ahead of the game in a lot of respects. And the South Florida chapter is actually just starting its very first model investment club this past summer and fall.
Is there one in Central Florida?
North Florida has always had one. I think it may be at least 10 years old.
Space Coast or something?
Space Coast, yes, North Florida. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. So what's been beautiful that I've found in the visiting of investment clubs is that exactly what you're saying, and you get to see how they are operating. And because you are a Better Investing volunteer and a chapter director, you're able to do presentations and just, you know, answer questions from a perspective of being an ambassador of BI for any club that needs help. Let's move on to some of your favorite classes. I know you said that you've been to 13 conferences. Who are some of your favorite speakers? What are some of your favorite classes to attend? And tell us why, just so that we can get a sense of the type of quality of education, investment education that BI provides.
Well, just like Julie said, we needed to take her class three times to really have it sink in. I will repeat classes that I like. And one class I've been to several times is Red Flags, the investing that Ann Kubiak teaches. And I remember her seeing me after a class or right before a class or something one time. She says, Van, you've taken this class before. I said, I know, but I learn something new every time. And that's true because, you know, when you're going home, say the plane ride afterwards, if you have to travel, your mind is so full. I mean, you just can't absorb it all. And even though I try to take notes and all and print stuff out, I don't. Ron Bruin's classes that I've taken more recently at our local education fair have really kind of hit the spot. Ken Cavula is always good. Avi, one of his classes I loved was Every Picture Tells a Story. That visual analysis on the SSG is so important. Susie Artsberger, when she teaches, you know, those are some of the ones that stand out. You know, of course, the regulars like Mark and, you know, yeah, that they all do. But, you know, getting the idea of compounding into your head and what that can do for you and how to get started early, or if you've already gotten to that point where you're way past the early stage, but you have a child or a grandchild, you know, starting that college fund or starting that Gift for Minors Act or something so the money can grow. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I want to reach out to people about.
And talk to us about what you did with your kids and what you're doing now or preparing to do with your grandkids. I know you were on with Bobby Kincaid, but let's hear, you know, some of the things that you're starting to do with them.
Well, with my kids, I did the Uniform Gift to Minors Act. And, you know, I did have the advantage, you know, Mom was well set after Daddy died, and when she had extra money, she would give money to her children or her grandchildren. And I would put that into their college. You know, I didn't use it. Mom was very frugal, and I learned to be pretty frugal, and my daughter is frugal. So, you know, I don't think we waste money. Some hate for me to come back from Publix because it was BOGO. Buy one, get one free. But anyway, I put their money in there. And at that time, I didn't know a whole lot. This was in the 70s, early 80s. And so it was probably fun that my advisor suggested. But it was, I think, a small cap and probably a big growth fund. So, you know, it was probably a good mix. And it grew to be ample to put them both through college with money left over. So we never had to take any student loans out. And once that money was there, I didn't touch it, you know, and they left it until they finished college.
And let me let me put a pin in this though, because you know you did what you saw your dad do, and you continue what both your mom and dad started. How much, when you were a parent, were you putting regularly into this account? Just to give people a sense of, you know, the small actions that you were doing that really afforded them to have a cost-free, or I should say debt-free, education?
I don't really remember that part because back then, you know, things weren't tight, but they weren't tons of extra money. I had started my own 403B as a teacher in the 90s, so some of my money went into that. And it grew over time. I don't remember so much with that. Now, with the grandkids, I have three, and I now have a teenager. My oldest just turned 13 the other day. So 13, 10, and 8, and the younger two will get to be the next age soon. But as soon as they had a Social Security number, as soon as I got that from the dad, I started them a college account. And at the time, I tried to put in, and it was actually two different funds. And one was, I don't remember the difference right now, but it was two funds that invested a little bit differently. And I tried to put in $50 into each fund for each of the children once a month. So that has grown nicely. And then lately, things have been more comfortable. And so I doubled it. And so when I look at the totals when the reports come in monthly, and sometimes I send a copy to their dad and say, look at the college funds. You know, I can be happy and excited and proud. But I've got a surprise for them this weekend. Y'all don't know, but this weekend, a Saturday, is going to be Christmas for our family.
Whoa.
We had to delay Christmas because of other visiting and COVID and all that kind of stuff. So we are finally getting together in my daughter's house Saturday in North Atlanta for Christmas. And when COVID hit last summer or spring, Disney tanked. And we're a Disney family. I mean, we've been on Disney cruises. We're Disney Vacation Club. I mean, we made it Disney. It's in our blood, okay? And it's in our children's blood, especially my daughter's. So Disney stock fell to $88 a share I think in March, late March. And I bought 6 shares each for the grandkids. It's still in my name, but it's their stock, okay? And it will go into a uniform different miners account. We just haven't done it yet. But I made up, and I don't have them where I can really reach them, some fake stock certificates the other day. And I picked up from Office Depot some little gold medallion seals to go on them and all, and try to make it as official looking as I can. And so this weekend I'm going to start trying to introduce them to the idea of investing. My son said, they're too young. And I said, I don't think so. And I was thinking of you. I only learned when she was young.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know how much it'll sink in, how fast, but I know Disney is something they're interested in. I'm sure they're interested in McDonald's or other places too, but, you know, it's a start. But keep your fingers crossed for me.
No, I think that the proof is in the pudding, and you've already been investing mentally, spiritually, emotionally into your children and your grandkids. And so this extra step, I'm sure, is going to heavily influence them, like watching your dad. You know, they may not know the importance of it at this moment, but what you are giving them is a start that your parents gave you and that you gave, you know, your daughter. And I think every parent, that's all they really want to do. You know, give their child, their offspring, their legacy a step up.
When Jeannie was in college, she went to Auburn, if I can plug Auburn Tigers. She actually bought a house like her junior year with part of her college money because she had enough. And John went to Mercer, and he was on so many scholarships and ROTC and stuff, he didn't have to use tons of his money. So when he's in the Army, he's an officer in the Army, and he majored in accounting because he was interested in, at the time, in the FBI, and that's one of the things he thought would help. He never wants to be a CPA. He's torn that away. But made a career in the Army. But he had 2 rental houses in Savannah, you know, when he was still in his 20s or 30s. So, you know, they took care of the money, and they used it, I think, pretty wisely.
So, yeah, and I'm sure that came from not just giving the money, but imparting the education along with the money.
But I haven't gotten him into BI, but he definitely is into investing, and he kept the Disney stock that he had as a young person. I don't remember what year he got it. And this is kind of a point that I'd like to make. Our emotions get the best of us, the stocks. We can get overly attached to a stock, and that can go either way. And for me, I was afraid I was too emotionally invested in Disney, and I let an advisor, that I don't have anymore, talk me into selling, because I can't think why I sold it. But I want to kick myself every day that I sold it, because it has split and everything, and I don't know how much John has in it now, but he didn't sell it, and bless him.
And John is your son, right?
Yes.
Excellent. So, you know, you throughout your life had exposure to investing, and at 52 really joined BI and went head on. Two questions. Well, I'll start with one. When did the compound interest light bulb go off for you as a individual investor?
That's hard to say. Maybe with the college account, which I started before BI, for the kids because I wasn't in BI, you know, in my 30s. I don't really know.
And that's a good point, too, because even before you joined BI, you were doing some investing with the little bit that you knew. You knew it was important enough to do. And so since you did at least do that and do that all the way up to 52, I know you say you never even thought about leaving BI, but what really made you stay? Because,
I love learning. I mean, at 8:30 tonight, stock up, you know.
Stock up, yep.
You're making tonight a long night.
Yes.
Ticker talk, stock up. I still try to be regular for that. I love the conventions. I love the repair shop in the magazine. You know, I'll look at the portfolio before I read anything and kind of make some judgments on my own. Well, that PE is way too high. They shouldn't have that. They have a too big of a percentage in that stock, you know, whatever. I love reading that. I get Kiplinger's magazine. I don't read that cover to cover, but, you know, I'll see something and I'll email or call my advisor and all I have to do is start speaking in Spanish and they know who I am. I'm buddies with all of them. I said, well, what do you think? One time at a BI convention, they were talking a lot in the convention and maybe, you know, just different people I admire and trust about a certain stock. And I, you know, was looking it up and trying to do a quick and dirty SSD on it and stuff like that. It looked really good. And I called my advisor from lunch. And I said, Richard, what do you think about this stock? I kind of like to invest $1,000 or $1,500 or something. And he paused and he said, no, I don't think so. Let's go with $2,500. So, you know, BI has influenced me. I let it triple and then I sold it.
Yeah, you know, I think you make the point. BI really does make you a better investor. And even if you have a financial advisor, which we all know some people do, it helps you to be a better client because of the questions you know how to ask.
Exactly.
The fact-checking, you know, you just really can't be easily taken advantage of because you're not, like you mentioned before, you're not solely relying on this person, this other person, to have your best interest at heart and believing that they even know what they're doing because, sometimes you can't tell when another person doesn't.
Yeah, and you need to know that person has is like-minded. And, you know, BI believes in investing in good quality growth stocks at a good value and then holding on. You know, you don't sell them in 25 days or, you know, even 3 months. You know, if it's a good quality stock, you're going to let it go. And you're not going to sell it if the market drops a little bit. You're going to let it ride. And just looking at the market for the last few years, people that have held on have done pretty well. And when we were stationed in Germany, I had one advisor. That was the one that might have taught me into selling Disney. But when I came back, I went to some kind of a class. It might have been a Christian-based finance class. And I met someone there, and he was an advisor. And, you know, we had a like-minded philosophy. So I ended up switching to him, and now it's his son I'm with. So it's a long-term relationship.
I love it. I love it. And I do want to take this opportunity to plug the Georgia chapter has tomorrow from 7 to 8 p.m. The Better Investing Georgia chapter is hosting an open forum. And I think that it is a phenomenal space that the Georgia chapter has created because it's one of the first times I've ever heard, and I've been to at least one, where it's no agenda. So anybody can come on and ask whatever question they have. They have somebody last time had a question about an investment club, and what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Sometimes people come on and ask questions about certain analysis on a stock or SSG. And so I think that, especially for the beginner investor, sometimes you can attend an event that we're hosting or a class, and things are over your head. Take a moment to take out your notes and bring them here tomorrow at the Georgia Chapters Club Mentoring Open Forum that they have, and see if you can get your questions answered, because I think that kind of time and attention to really address, you know, the question or the hiccup that you have to help you move forward in your learning process is invaluable. So that's tomorrow, Thursday, February 11th, from 7 to 8. If you want to register, just go to betterinvesting.org, find the Georgia chapter, and go to local events, and you'll be able to find that event and all the rest of their events listed there. And as Ann just mentioned, tonight there's a stock-up presentation at about 8 o'clock. So,
8:30.
Okay, thanks. So you can also, okay, so you can also find that on betterinvesting.org. And this is, you know, this is one of the benefits of membership. And if you are not yet a member, please check us out. You can try our 90-day free trial. I have something new that I just decided to bring out of the bag today, mid-February. I am going to be doing a raffle, not a raffle, a giveaway. Any new members, any new BI members, paid plus BI membership within January and February, if you email me at abetterinvesting@gmail.com and you let me know that you become a new paid member, not a new free trial member, a new paid member, then I will mail you Main Street Millionaire. You'll get your own hard copy of that book. But that is really only for those that became a new member or even renewed their membership. So that I wanted to just share with people, to give them a little encouragement of why becoming a member of Better Investing is so important, and to add to the perks of the Better Investing membership. So, Anne, what advice would you give to new investors and new BI members?
Well, before I answer that question, don't forget it, because I might forget it. One thing, as a BI member, I'm very enthusiastic about it because it's done so much for me, and I've learned so much. Jim Linnigan, who's on, was a high school classmate of mine, and he lives in New York or New Jersey or something, and I got him involved. But one thing I do is when, you know, I'm trying to give my phone number or name or something to somebody, it's for any reason, I've had business cards made, and they're green for money. And they also say betterinvesting.org on them and have the website. And I did use those when I was a director, and I'm not a director now, but I still have some, and I'm still using them. And it gives me an excuse, you know, when they say, well, what's Better Investing? You know, oh, it's a nonprofit that teaches you about how to invest. And I think I got that idea from Julie Warner. And also, as long as they let me, I'll get extra magazines to try to leave in doctor's offices and stuff and give away. So that's one way I try to evangelize, if that's allowed, Better Investing, because it is important to me. It does mean so much. Now, tell me again your question.
What is the advice that you have for new investors and new, better investing members?
Take advantage of the webinars that Better Investing offers. And there's a whole lot of stuff on YouTube that I think we forget to mention, and I'm not a big YouTube person, so I forget about sometimes. But, you know, how to do this and how to do that and how to make some certain decisions. I think if we don't take advantage, and just the fact that the BI website offers all that detailed stock information in the SSG that comes up automatically, that is worth the cost of your membership so much. I mean, I get offers all the time from ValueLine and go, well, why do I need to do that? I either have it in BI or I have it through my advisor, you know, so I've been lucky in that respect. But it's important that you know, you learn to do all that stuff, and Stock Up especially and Ticker Talk teach you so much. And I know Kinkaboo's Roundtable, I used to attend that all the time. I just don't have time right now to do that one too, but I get so much from the other two. The one piece of advice is don't put all your eggs in one basket. I was telling Ann beforehand, I'm POA for a friend that has Alzheimer's, and I'm in charge of all her money. She had put virtually all her retirement into three condominiums in Panama City Beach in the same building, and it was hit by Hurricane Michael. So for 2 years, she lost all that income and still had to pay out mortgage. Still had to pay out HOA fees and insurance and all that kinds of stuff. She's doing okay with long-term care insurance, thank goodness. And I just started a stock account for her because it wasn't making any money in savings with the bank. But she put all her eggs in one basket. She didn't understand investing. So one advice not to do that.
Well, thank you. And yeah, I think diversification is so important, especially right now with all the craze there is about investing. You know, in as much excitement as we all may have about the market, you know, please adhere to what Ms. Ann Newman just said, because, you know, even if you did do your homework, which a lot of people are not doing homework right now, do not put all of your eggs in one basket, hoping that it will fly you to the moon.
All these crazes.
Right.
There's too many crazes that are just, oh, let's do that for the new investor. And they can lose it and then be disenfranchised from investing forever because it scared them. Ellen, you're muted, but you're not talking, so I don't know.
Miss Ann has a question.
Oh,
I was waiting for you to finish, Ayumi. Thank you so very much. And I wanted to, before we close, I wanted to ask you to share a conversation you were having with me about something you heard on our show that encouraged you to wake up in the middle of the night and to begin to write your own hashtag investing story. Could you share with us?
I wish I remembered who it was. It was about a month and a half, 2 months ago. And I was thinking, well, what was my childhood like? You know, when did I start thinking about money? And, you know, I made a couple of notes during your program, but then, you know, later on went to bed and all. But I woke up 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't know when it was, and I could not sleep. And all that stuff was running through my head. And because I do not remember my parents really talking about money. I remember that we didn't go for the fad clothes or the, what were they called, saddle shoes, black and white shoes, all the things that was a rage in the 60s. when I was in high school and junior high. If I asked for any of that, they said no, but it didn't bother me that much, you know. I didn't ask for tons. I enjoyed some homemade things that they made for me with dolls and doll furniture and stuff, and it wasn't a big deal. Later on, I kind of resented the fact that my mother went to yard sales all the time and would buy all this used stuff, especially when I was bringing my young children and they were playing with all these used toys. That kind of bothered me. Because I figured, you know, they probably could afford to get something new. But I don't remember that much of it, other than, like I said, watching Daddy, the idea of being frugal. Mom would go to a restaurant and she would take her own doggy bags back then, plastic bags, and stuff all the leftovers or the leftover little butters or anything like that into her bag and into her purse, because I don't think it was kosher to say, could I have a box or a bag to take this home? They were definitely frugal.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. I just wanted you to share that because, again, we were talking about the fact that everybody has an investing story. It's just that, you know, sometimes many of us don't want to admit it. And so when we do, I think it's the beginning of the journey to education and being open to receive learning more. So thank you so very much for that. Back to you, Ayanna. We can prepare to wrap up.
Yeah, I can hand it off to you, Ms. Newman, if you have any closing remarks, because I, you know, this conversation has been wonderful for me, just getting to know you a little bit better, and even the history of the Better Investing Georgia chapter even more.
I'm trying to think if there's anything left. I'm looking at my notes. I know my brother was a day trader, and he did not do well. But mostly the other women in my family have left their husbands to do all the finance stuff. I do a lot more of the investing in our family, but, you know, he's definitely saved and paid off the house and all that kind of stuff, so no complaints. So I think that's what I can think of right now, but I appreciate the opportunity. And hello to the people I know that are on.
Yes. Hello to Jim.
And Bobby Hiroff.
Yes, and Howard.
In Alabama, and Howard and Charles in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you all for coming on and supporting the show, but more importantly, supporting Ann Newman. And I want to say, Sarah says hi, Ann.
I want to repeat what Howard said on your show. The best time to start investing is yesterday.
Best time to start is yesterday. Yes.
I called him after some of the shows when you quoted him and told him that you were coming.
I think we have to get a shirt made that says a little, you know, Howard Johnson underneath so that everybody knows. The real Howard Johnson.
I like that.
Yes, the best time to start investing is yesterday. But I do want to say, Anne, that I really benefited from you sharing how you implemented and applied what you knew, even when you didn't know much, and how you joined BI and stuck with BI, and even more importantly, how you propped up your children and your grandchildren and started them early by investing for them and by sharing those principles, compound interest, time value of money, persistence, patience with them. I think that is really the lesson that really hit home for me, and I hope, you know, hits home for other people.
I just think that my grandkids were so far away. They're not that far, but I don't see them a whole lot, especially with COVID going on.
Yeah. So thank you. And Ms. Ann?
Absolutely, Ayomi. Thank you. We also want to mentioned that we are starting our planning for the financial empowerment event they're hosting virtually in May. So please listen out for that. We will start next week by posting the registration. It's on Eventbrite. And again, like I already shared, please connect with the Georgia chapter and participate in many of the other online events that's hosted by Better Investing. I do want to say, too, that we are not financial planners. We are not stockbrokers. We are simply volunteers with Better Investing. And we are so honored to have one of our own on tonight, Ms. Ann Newman. She's here every week cheering on everybody, no matter who we have on as a guest. And so, again, tonight, it was such an honor to have her on and share with us. And with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. Go ahead.
I have one announcement, too. The registration for the SummerStock Market Game experience has just opened this week.
Awesome. Okay.
And so for any and everybody that is interested, if you want your children or any youth around you to participate, if you're part of a youth organization, or even if you just want to volunteer and help out or even give to the SummerStock Market experience, please just go to Climb USA, climbusa.org, and there's a form there for you to fill out to express your interest in whatever capacity that you want to participate. So just wanted to give that as well because it's for all ages. So right now we're doing anywhere from elementary to college age. So, you know, definitely if you have somebody in mind and they are interested in participating, just go to climbusa.org. And there on the home page is an orange button that will take you to the page. And if you scroll down, you can fill out the form that's most appropriate.
All right. So if all minds and hearts are clear, we want to thank everybody, and we will see everybody next Wednesday, same time, same place. All right. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Goodbye.